Welcome to the Non-Breaking Space Show from Austin, Texas, on the internet's own Christopher Schmidt. Now on today's show, we welcome Peter Noel. Peter is an independent designer whose clients include Apple, Flinto, and Juice Shop. Peter is also the creator of Sketchmaster, which is a great video course for learning Sketch. Before we get started, some things I'd like you to know. Make plans for CSS DevConf 2017. It's coming up fast this October 9th to the 11th. It's more about CSS. It's about topics like web components, React, animation, Webpack, and so much more. So grab your tickets now and learn from Chris Coyer, Wes Boss, Mina Markham, Harry Roberts, Estelle Weil, and so many other great speakers. It's all happening in New Orleans again this October. Tickets are on sale at cssdevconf.com. The UX Design Newsletter is a weekly list of articles, tutorials, and inspiration handpicked by yours truly. Sign up at uxdesignnewsletter.com and have the best links of the week sent to your email. Speaking of email, set it and forget it with the Non-Breaking Space Show newsletter. So whenever a new show is ready, have it show up in your email box. Just sign up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. Of course, you can find show notes and links discussed in today's episode at nonbreakingspace.tv. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Teleject, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T. As always, thank you for telling others about Non-Breaking Space. Now, on with the show.
So you wanted to talk about, I was kind of excited to see that you wanted to go over like advanced workflows and kind of techniques and stuff that, that go beyond the basics, because I feel like that has been what has motivated me most, like to create training and write articles and stuff like that.
Right.
So yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit more about maybe some of the things that you want to cover or that like you want to ask me about. And I'm happy
with
that too.
I'm mostly at your knowledge, because I feel like I'm not a Sketch expert. And to be honest, like I just realized my Sketch was out of date like 2 weeks ago. So I had to go update it because I was using the Sketch Mac App Store version.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this is really kind of old and out of date. It's been a while. And then I realized like, oh, wait, I totally ignored all the warnings to go download it. So I actually,
I'll skip for now.
Yeah, skip for now. And then I came back like, oh, I'm really out of date. And I'm like, that made me feel sad that I missed that. But also I felt happy because I felt like, oh, wow, they've actually been pouring a lot of new things into Sketch.
Yeah.
That I've been missing. So I'm kind of like at your, like where you want to go in terms of what the advanced features are and what people should know. But, sure. But you know, for me, I feel as though, you know, as someone who's been trained on Adobe products forever, and Adobe's, you know, been around forever, you know, also I'm at a disadvantage again, because I really gravitated towards Photoshop, in my younger years. And so I know Photoshop pretty well. I can go in there, I can get what I need done and get out faster than I could Illustrator. And so I'm kind of glad Flash didn't survive, because I felt like I should have just gone to Illustrator, done Flash, and I would have like had this great career. Yeah. But now like there's like no resurgence with SVG and all that. And but you know, they're all, and I'll mention this later on, but you know, there's always been a kind of application that says like, oh, this is gonna be the Photoshop killer, this is gonna be know, the application. And it feels like Sketch is hung around the longest of all those. So
yeah, it definitely, it like a lot of people, I think a few years ago, there were just so many articles, it was like Sketch versus Photoshop. And, you know, it seems like people have kind of gotten on with their work, which is really what we should all be just doing. Like, it doesn't really matter quite as much. Like there's still things that I jump into Photoshop for occasionally, or things that I jump into Illustrator for occasionally. And like there's never going to be a silver bullet tool. I think like especially digital designers, because we're making things that are software, and like we're very focused on the tools that we're using, and it really doesn't matter quite as much. It's easy to obsess over it, but you know, there's really and like one thing that I've thought a lot about is, so I did some work on Flinto, I helped design, the original version of Flinto, and the designing a design tool is really a kind of a fascinating challenge. One of the things that it really makes you think about is like, to what extent can we create a tool that allows you to design or prototype like things that haven't been made yet, haven't been like things that we don't currently see. It's easy to say like, oh, well, like we'll spring load like a bounce animation or something. Mm-hmm. But when you start thinking about like, well, when Apple came out with iOS 7, how did they prototype background blurs and some of the new things that they were doing? Well, they actually had to like code that because no prototyping tool, no design tool was like made. No design tool had those features. So like how much do our design tools just kind of like keep us creating the same thing?
Right.
And to that extent, like, you know, should we be quite as like religiously married to just like thinking this is the workflow, this is the tool, this, you know? Mm-hmm.
There's definitely like this like fish in the fishbowl type of feel for designers. Like whenever there is a new, at least for a while, like whenever there was a new Apple redesign of their site, you know, within 3 months you could see those design effects and websites. And so it got kind of annoying actually. And I was guilty of it the same as everyone else was, but yeah. So when you're, I can definitely feel like, you know, if you live the tool, you start designing with the traits of the tool coming into your work. And so I feel like, that's definitely a part of it. So, also like another reason why I'm really happy that Sketch is around is because it feels like, oh wow, we're really kind of breaking out of like this palette syndrome that Adobe has, you know, of just like tabs everywhere and stuff like that too.
Just add another palette.
Yeah, exactly. So, it feels just like, you know, it's, you know, a lot more options too, but just like as any design tool, but it just feels like almost more dashboardy type of feel to it, where I can, like, it feels like almost like a sports car, and it feels like
right.
Yeah,
one or two fewer things, but the things that it does a lot faster. Right. I'm kind of curious to hear your perspective on training. You were one of the creators of Frontend Masters, right?
No.
What was that? Am I confusing it with something else? I'm so sorry.
No, it's all right. No, yeah. So we did Environments for Humans, which is an online conference company. So we've done a lot of like for 5, 6, 7, I don't know how many years, many years. We did conferences every month about different topics. So like 1 month would be like CSS, then be JavaScript, then we do content strategy, accessibility, which is great because I totally love it because I feel like I'm more of a generalist in a lot of ways because I get this. I love content strategy. I love making the site accessible. I love CSS. You know, CSS is my main passion because I just feel like I love design and I love computers and I love the web. So it's just, you know, I love people.
Shared passion there.
Yeah. And so I just love everything about the web, and I love people who are specialized, and I love people who aren't, you know, webmasters, web or whatever. And so UX, you know, we did UX stuff. So, but recently, like, I just got kind of burnt out talking to everyone. I guess we're doing a conference every month, and we still do CSS DevConf, which is happening in October. And so, we love that. And that's also kind of like a community based one, because that's the double blind voting on sessions. And so we feel like that's where the content is, I guess, more king, if you will, there. So, so that's what we love about that one. But so we should try to wind that down, the online stuff. And so I've actually been working with Frontend Masters, I guess, since April.
Okay.
And so as working on their publishing stuff and trying to hopefully, help them polish some of the content stuff and get courses out, you know, sooner than later, and then also kind of help them, you know, with it's sort of the same thing I do for E for H is just that I do a lot of different things, but I'm able to spend more time polishing on them and stuff like that too. So yeah. But yeah,
cool. That's great. Yeah. So you're no stranger to kind of like what it takes to get good training and good content out there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it takes, yeah. So, I mean, we talk about your courses, but yeah, so like training is very tough. And, I've seen a lot of people, a lot of speakers. I think at one point we've had I think over 500 speakers that we've seen throughout E4H. So, we've seen a lot of really like a wide range of styles of terms of people over there. So what are your thoughts on like training for the web?
I haven't created training so much for the web. I think that, you know, one thing that I realized is, and that I would definitely want to talk about is the, we live in a time of like 99-cent apps and free apps. And then we also, and like free Medium articles and free YouTube videos. And, you know, then there's Stack Overflow. And like so many of us are either fully or partially self-trained. Right. So there's like a reticence to spend money on like developing ourselves through actual workshops or like maybe an online course that's like specialized in one thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because it's more just conditioning than I think actually where the values of most professionals are. Like we all, so I took, when I learned front end development, I took a 10-week course on it, and God, I can't imagine how long it would have taken me to figure out all of those things, or, you know, to train myself on all those on my own. I would have had to figure out from 100 different sources, like what I should learn and then learn it. And then like, who's there to help me when I mess up. And so there's like one of my kind of beliefs about training is there's, like it makes sense for there to be a lot more information out there for free, but also there's just still immense value in like really good training, whether it's on person or online. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to kind of forget that because our time is really valuable. And when somebody guides us through saying like on this specialized topic, like here's exactly the stuff that you should learn and here's where you're probably going to mess up. And here's the way you can get around that, like not trying to sugarcoat that. There's a lot of training out there, unfortunately, that that tries to make it seem like this workflow for anything is really smooth.
Yeah.
And it rarely is, whether it's web or design. And so for my courses, I really wanted to focus on like what are the things that are going to, what are the gotchas?
Yeah.
And what are the, you can create a design or you can build something on the web in a few different ways. And it's going to look the same, but it might respond a little differently and it might have repercussions later when you try and add on to it. And so getting like a comparison. So for example, in Sketch, there are a few different ways to use images in your designs. Well, let's compare those up front and then figure out like, well, based on what we're designing, this is going to make the most sense. But if you want to have control over that, then you're going to have to use a different approach. And like, it's really the same with front end. But it would be far easier to just kind of create a tutorial that says, we're going to make an app. Here's how you do it. And then like, here's how you bring an image in. Boom. Well, you know how to bring images in. And it's like design isn't always creating the same thing. Like it's not always creating the music player or the Twitter app, you know? I'm a big fan of kind of exploring the tough bits.
I totally agree. Cause like, I've only been with front end masters, you know, full time for a few months, and so I've you know audited or sat through, I think about 20 days worth of workshops,
Yeah.
And I feel the quality that you get is one, of course, you get the, you know, it's not just a 45-minute session, you know, like you get a conference or what, like a conference talk or whatever that, you know, and which is what we, you know, did for E4H is just a lot of, you know, we do a content summit, but it'd be like, you know, 45 minutes a day. We did used to do online workshops back in the day, several years ago, but just didn't think we could do it. But one of the things I liked about Front End Masters is that, one, you get more of a deep dive into a topic, but also it's the Q&A aspect of it that happens as a teachers go through and say, like, you know, a student has a question about what's going on, or like wants to add, like, well, why don't you do this instead of that? And, you know, those type, I think that's where like the real knowledge comes in and say, like,
yeah,
like, why are you doing this? And basically that'll just saves me time and money pretty much, you know, by knowing, you know,
yeah,
knowing where the pitfalls are and the rationale behind the choices that you made. And so, yeah, definitely there's just a lot of, like, good to your point about a lot of free tutorials out there and people kind of, and I feel like, you know, that's just the nature of the web for some reason, just like, you know, we want to share knowledge, and our industry is very unique to other industries where we share knowledge just so easily. And, you know, you can point that to ViewSource for a browser, always being in the browser. But I think it's just also the nature of the web being free. But also at some point, you know, there's got to be, someone has to put like some serious, you know, thinking behind a tutorial.
Yeah.
And
well, that's really it. I mean, it's also like, you can make a quick little explainer of something that you did, but if you're going to figure out the best way to do something, mm-hmm. And you want to really dive, you know, do a lot of research, and like this last course that I put out, which is it's more advanced. It's about Sketch and SVG workflows. I spent 8 months making it because I was determined to figure out the best way of doing every workflow. And getting to the bottom of questions that had always plagued me, like what are all of those little tags and attributes and stuff at the top of an SVG? When do I need them? When can I delete them? And like, there are a couple of little Stack Overflow conversations about it, but they're not definitive. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anybody publish research about like, well, I just tested, you know, 20 different browsers, and I just talked to people who engineer the browsers. And so like I did that and I wrote that article or like there were some optimizations that didn't exist in any SVG tool. And so I built my own optimizer, and it was like, that's the level of deep dive that we should be learning from. And there are people who specialize in certain areas who kind of like already figure that stuff out with their work. I figured a lot of that out, you know, through my work, but those are the things that we should be learning from, rather than just, you know, a quick free thing put up on YouTube, that says, how to do something and like maybe, you got it done, but, not the definitive way.
Right. You know, and I do want to get back to the optimizer and want to talk about that, but it's just like, but yeah, there is a different like trade-off in terms of like time, money, you know, like I love that point you made about, I could read 200 free articles and I might know what I'm talking. Like I might like get to the point of where I become a master, or I could just spend, you know, an afternoon, you know,
right,
through a course that's like, you know, more definitive, spend more time on it, and then I can get up to speed faster. Like, which one do you want to be? You want to spend like, you know, forever like trying to get
up to speed?
And that's one of the things I love about Front End Masters. I don't want to talk about Front End Masters all the time, but they are my, I do work for them. But I do, they're one of the people like I felt like in terms of courses is like, I know I'm not a JavaScript expert, and I keep on trying to learn JavaScript and get better at it. But it wasn't until like I, you know, sat through all these like 20 plus days workshops, like, oh, I finally understand the scope and the landscape of JavaScript. And so then I could start, you know, I'm a visual person, I'm a designer. And so I could start like filling in like, oh, okay, this is where things are connecting. And as someone who's been around, you know, the web before there was JavaScript, you know, there, I was like trying to piece together, you know, where I left off JavaScript and where those connections are made. And so, and you get people who maybe write articles about JavaScript that are, that just started like a year ago, you know, they don't know the legacy of what's happening beforehand. And so, not that they need to know it, I'm just saying that that's better. But for my case, I need to know like the ramp up from like what I've known before and where we're going next. And so I find that, very refreshing to learn and to understand that. And not that, you know, people need to have a workshop about like the history of the web, because but I find that's very,
I couldn't agree more. I wrote an article about pixel density because I was just like, there are a couple really technical things out there, but nobody's, it was actually for one of my courses. I was like, if I'm going to go into like UX workflows, like I just want people to have a great explainer for like what the hell 1x and 2x and 3x and 1.5x and all that stuff and like why it exists. And it exists because of like a very digestible history that like I just told pretty quickly of like, you know, higher resolution displays and like devices that fake it and why they fake it and just a little bit of that stuff. And the history can be tremendously helpful for learning. It's also a story.
Yeah.
And like as humans, we're programmed to remember stories more than just facts, you know?
Right. Yeah. I feel like stories, like I just, we can get totally on tangent, off tangent here, but but like, I just feel like the history of the web is great, but I feel like also I'm kind of biased and actually like saw it, but also I feel like people, you know, are people, right? And they do this, you know, they have needs, like they want to like, hey, I just want to get my job done and leave at 5 p.m. or whatever. And, you know, like, you know, and just get the job done. And so I totally get that. But in terms of education, I feel like, you know, if we could be succinct about like the history of the web in terms of like why the rationale of why we do things the way we do, it just helps so much in terms of the context, just learning the context behind that. But yeah, but I do want to get back to the optimizer and talk about like, you know, there is SVGO that's out there as an optimizer. Why did you make your own optimizer? And it's free out there for people to use, which I find like it's totally awesome.
Yeah.
They have that. But like, why did you
make
your own optimizer?
Well, the first thing to mention is that I didn't set out to duplicate anything that was already out there.
Yeah.
It was the cool thing about SVG is that unlike other formats like JPEG or PNG, it's not, you can open up an SVG file and like understand the markup that you see. The only things that SVG optimizers are doing is like making very clear changes. So for example, a really easy one to imagine is when you write in an attribute. So for example, you write an attribute for opacity and then you write like 0.5 for 50% opacity. Well, that zero before the decimal isn't actually necessary for, it's like optional, but it, you know, if you have a bunch of attributes that have zeros before decimals, you can cut down a little bit on the file size, just like ever so slightly. There are optimizations that are far more impactful, for the file size, and then some that aren't really so much for the file size, but more for the kind of reliability or kind of restructuring of the information itself inside an SVG. So I created SVGito with a few optimizations that aren't in SVGO. And I love SVGO. I use it in the SVG OMG web app, and it works really well after SVGito. So SVGito has some optimizations that are more fundamental that are kind of more optional. So whereas SVGOMG or SVGO rather is just trying to kind of compress the file size, and it has like 30 different options to do that. I kind of wanted to say, well, maybe, you know, like it's really easy for a person to tell when their graphic looks wrong. And sometimes, for example, fill rule attributes aren't necessary. The best way to do that is to have an optimization that can kind of figure out some easy cases where fill rule attributes aren't necessary, just remove them, and then also give you the option to just get rid of all of them and give you a little preview. And if it looks the same, then you're good to go. And that's not something that would work on every file, it can be really helpful like a lot of the time. The optimization that inspired me to create it was Sketch changed how it exports borders a little bit. And there was like this one edge case that created a just like more markup than I thought was necessary. And so I got tired of making the changes myself in the code. And I was like, this is what computers are for. Right. I'm continuing to add optimizations to it. And I think it's just a free contribution to the design and development community. It works best with SVGO, and I'm happy to that's the sort of thing that like I can create because I'm selling a course for more than free. And so I'm able to put some resources and time into creating a new tool.
Cool. Yeah. So it sounds like, your optimizer is, for people who, you work in Sketch, so someone has a Sketch app SVG, they take it out and then they just run it through your optimizer, and then they can also take it through SVGO and then see if they get any more savings out of that right file. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Fix a couple little things, and SVG is just so cool because when you open it up, it, like, it's all right there. It says like, I made a circle, it's red, and then I made this other like custom path, and like you can edit some text in there, and so it's just a fantastic technology.
Right. I want to get to that point where I can read SVG like I can HTML and CSS. That's why I want to get a point, like, whereas it becomes like the Matrix type of thing. Like, oh man,
you'd be surprised. It's you're probably almost already there.
Yeah, I feel like if it's a circle, I could definitely suss it out.
So, yeah,
anything a little bit more complex, like, oh man, is this a taxi cab? I don't know. But I like that because also it reminds me of Google's new optimizer for JPEG. It's I'm going to just butcher the name. I think Gitzel. I think it's Gitzley, I think is the name of it. And so it's actually, it's not like a normal JPEG compressor, but it kind of like, it does A-B testing of your JPEG compressions. And so it's a very slow process. It's not as like you jump it into Image Optim and it spits it out. Yeah. It goes and does actual calculations based off of, its own, algorithms. And then it spits out a JPEG that's almost like 40% smaller, like almost like you get like 60% of what the original output.
Yeah.
And then you can actually run it again through Image Optim and get like 2% more out of it. And I just like, wow, this is so amazing. And especially like, I think with the responsive web design is, there's like been this embrace of line art, which is, I think, one of the great things that makes Sketch so popular is that for vector illustrations is that, now we have like this big honking, JPEG with like as our main like poster frame for our websites. And so I was like, well, if we can just have the file size of our JPEGs just by using this, new algorithm, like, this new optimizer, like it's totally worth it for doing that. So, so that's another thing. Like the responsive web design, I think that's another reason why we have so much, exploration into SVG and line art to make it so.
And it's really capable of so much more. I feel like maybe this is just my own taste, but I think we can graduate from the line art era. Yeah. In some ways it's really cool and it should continue to exist as one kind of illustration style.
Yeah.
But the there are so many things that you can create. Obviously you can put anything into a bitmap. You can create so much just with SVG, with like live vector graphics in the browser, mm-hmm. That have blend modes on them and, mm-hmm. Whatever you want to create. There's, I think that digital design and the illustration that kind of factors into it is starting to graduate to like realizing that, you know, it might be nice if we have a little watercolor illustration in there or something. And that's good. We don't need everything to just look like it was perfectly made by a computer. Yeah. It's actually really hard. I'm working on a project right now where I've been cutting a bunch of stuff out of paper and then bringing it into the computer, vectorizing it and now putting it as SVG. Mm-hmm. It can be with entire website layouts especially, but sometimes even within a graphic, it can be really hard to make something not look perfect, right, like a computer made it. And but it feels so much more warm and like human.
Right.
That's kind of what I'm interested in.
Yeah, that's what I love. It's like I was working for like one of my first web jobs. I was just like, I needed an icon of a pencil. And this is like, but there was no, you know, icons of pencils that I liked online. And so I actually went out of my like digital like office, web office, went around to all the offices looking for, hey, do you have a number two pencil? Do you have a number two pencil? And then I found one, you know, at the front desk. And I was like, can I borrow this? And they're like, sure, why? And of course, you know, I should have just told some BS answer, like, you know, I filled out a Scantron or something like that. But I told her the whole entire story of like, yeah, I'm going to scan. And so basically I took the pencil, scanned it in, took it into Photoshop, cleaned it up. And then so I had an icon and it looked like a real pencil. It didn't look like this fake cartoony pencil like that felt, you know, that didn't feel well. So this small office I was with, it was turned out to be like the story of the day, how I was so weird that but I felt like that's really a great way of just like, you know, taking your environment and putting it into your work. And even so, like there's a tutorial that I loved was like, I think it was Trent Walton did it, but I'm not really sure. But he actually took like, I don't know if it's him, but I felt like it feels like it's something he would do. But he actually take a pan and all the scratch marks on a pan, scan that in, and then he has a texture of that pan.
And
bring that in. I was like, wow, that's so awesome to like just bring in your organic nature of your surroundings into your pan. And so and just look at photos for textures and so that. I felt like and then bring that into artwork. And so it feels like a lot more like organic that way. And so I totally understand it. But like, I think I'm kind of reacting a little bit to probably delayed reaction to like delayed. So I hope it's not doesn't come out too much, but now, but like there was a time when like just every website just like looked like a big honking photograph with vector icons with some text underneath it. And I was just like, not every website needs to look like this. So, but yeah, I know we come a long way. And so, and I feel like I'm kind of past the Cosby sweater of SVG too. I'm kind of like oh, it's multicolored 90s. Like I'm okay. We don't need to relive that decade. Sorry. But
yeah, I think, you know, a huge part of like all, because what we're talking about here is ultimately styles and fashions that come and go in digital design. Right. And that's, I mean, I think that's a huge byproduct of not only what else we see out there, but the tools that we're using. Mm-hmm. And, I always try to do as much as possible with pen and paper, before jumping into the computer when it comes to determining, like, when it comes to like drawing an icon or figuring out the style. I've increasingly with my projects been looking to different design styles through history that might be really intriguing to pull from. And it's not that our tools aren't capable of that, but it's just not the default. And it's just not, for example, like when you're making something for the web, like computers want to make rectangles. They want to make solid rectangles. Right. And when you start trying to say like, I want this to be at a funky angle, but I want like everything to just line up perfectly along it. You have to get into all of these hacks just to make a computer do something that like it goes a little bit against its grain.
Right.
But the result of doing that is so much more interesting. And so I've been finding a lot of inspiration just by looking at like mid-century art, old lithographic posters from the 1920s and in Europe, or diving a lot more deeply into typography and figuring out like how that's going to inform the design of a site. Like me, there's a really cool italic and face that, and maybe like I'm going to reproduce its angle in the way that the website is laid out or something, and some cool ways that aren't the typical jumping off point for like for a web layout or an app layout.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. That's because I feel like that's because you want every element of your website to describe the emotion that you want the content, what the content is, what's the emotion. You want have every element be in resonance with what you're trying to say. And so, and it's not all going to be like one big JPEG with vector icons. So there's,
And there's a huge difference too. I've been reflecting on this a lot recently. There's a huge difference between tool-based design and kind of illustrative or marketing-related design. That's an exposition for something. So when you need to use a tool like an app, if you're designing an app, like you better make sure that efficiency and intuitiveness and utilitarian like function is just at the core of your design decisions. But when you're making a website that might be for like illustrating the values of a company or something like that, then you've got far more kind of artistic liberty that you can take. Right. And sometimes the design should be simple and minimalist, and it should get out of the way, and it should like as little design as possible. Like I'm a big fan of in general, you know, my designs being very distilled in what they are, not being overly cluttered. But at the same time, we're not always making tools. We're not always making things that need to be so utilitarian. Like we can have some fun with a funky typeface or like things coming, like getting crazy with the layouts, like looking at old, I actually see web design in that way, like non-user interface web design, as being a natural extension of graphic design.
Yeah.
And so the more that we, those of us who are designing for the web, can look at the history of graphic design, I think it will inspire a lot of new digital design that we're ready. It's our browsers are capable of this now. Like, you know, our design tools are capable of this now.
I think definitely. Cause I feel like, I feel like design, I totally agree with you. Like Jerks, I feel like if it's supposed to be informative and get out of the way, like that's what your design is trying to say. Like, hey, I'm not here. I'm just not here. You're here. This is your time. Yeah. And I feel like that's a language in itself. I like the idea of like calling it like app or tool based design. And then there's like, you know, the exploratory nature of design where like, you're like, I think it's like a marketing design. And I feel like that's like, hey, I'm here to tell a story.
Yeah.
And then the design elements can be more, not flamboyant, but like just they're more part of the storytelling process and they can lend their voices to it. And then that's where I feel like, you know, sometimes design is loud when it can be loud, and sometimes it's very quiet when it needs to be quiet and allow the other voices to come
in.
So cool.
Yeah. And like art can play a huge role in that what you're saying is like a storytelling web design in a way that like probably doesn't need to play as much of a role when you're designing the interface for an SVG optimizer, right, for example. Right.
So like I think we've come a long way. I'm not sure if you remember this or not, but I talked about it like a while back. I forgot which episode it was, but Kai Cruz, he created a tool called MetaTools. And I think they got bought, like some part of them got bought by Adobe. But he would come out with some funky applications, and the user interface was really a part of your experience with it, because part of it was I think creating 3D landscapes, right, for like more mainstream consumerism. And so you would actually have like touch these, like, you know, it was all like computers back in the day, so it was like 3D forward objects. So you move them, and depending on your movement of the orbs, you know, it would change the view of everything like that. And so it was like a very organic experience, but like hey, I just want to get in and get out. Like, and I was like, you know,
right.
So I don't want to have to like get clunky with my interface and turn to get out. But yeah, so it's kind of funny. But it was very unique. But in terms of a UI, but I want to get back to Sketch and talk about what would you say would be like the major hurdles if someone who's like coming from Photoshop or Illustrator or from the Adobe product realm in terms of like, hey, I want to get on board with Sketch. What would be like, what would you think? Which is kind of a tricky question, because you've done like 3 courses already on Sketch. So you probably have like some sort of, so it's kind of like some things that might be second nature. But what would you think is like the problems that people might have running into getting up and running with Sketch?
So I think that it depends largely on somebody's what somebody is used to designing in the Adobe tools, because they are like everything in the kitchen sink tools. They've been used for so many different things. If somebody is more used to a less interface or a less screen based design tool, and Sketch is very screen based in terms of its feature set, then simply getting used to thinking of responsive layouts, and Sketch has been adding some really neat features in that sense.
So what do you mean by screen based?
Yeah, so screen based being something for something that ends up on a digital device with a screen. That could be a website, that could be an app, that could be some components within that, like a digital icon. Something that exists on pixels ultimately. And so Sketch is vector based, all of the measurements are in pixels. And so it's kind of like this hybrid between Illustrator and Photoshop in that way. And then it has features that are really, really familiar for anybody who's done a lot of screen-based designer development work. So they've been adding a lot of responsive features. You can kind of lock something to one edge, and it will always stay locked to that edge. Or you can you have similar options for filling a photo into say a circle that you would have in CSS on the web. And you have blend modes in a way that not that the Adobe tools don't have blend modes, but I've found that the ones that are in Sketch, like the Adobe tools have some that are not in CSS, for example. And then simply thinking about a component based workflow with symbols and with certain shared styles. Again, it's not that those are absent from the Adobe tools, and shared styles have been, or you know, the equivalents have been really useful in, for example, designing books in InDesign for years. But they work a little bit differently and have some different needs when you're designing something that's going to end up on a screen. So that's what I mean by kind of like a native screen-based design tool. So thinking about responsive, thinking about component-based workflows, thinking about going between pixels and vector, really just like one keystroke to switch between them. And then one thing that I think a lot of people are not used to in the Adobe tools is the ease with which you can just duplicate an artboard or duplicate some layers and just kind of start creating another variation of them. Right. It's a very flexible and open tool. I I was at a typography conference recently, and somebody asked if I had done my type mockups in Sketch. And it wasn't because of anything aside from how many I made, because I made all these variations. I could make one and then just like kind of option drag my artboard and just start making some changes to it, and then option drag again, and go off in all of these fun directions in a way that it's not that you can't do that in an Adobe tool. It's just, it's not quite as efficient. So the tool itself ends up having these fun effects on our workflows. In terms of challenges in diving into it, the Adobe tools expose a lot of buttons and a lot of palettes in kind of an airplane cockpit way. So you know that they're there. And it's a mistake to think that Sketch doesn't have all of those capabilities, or that it doesn't have many of those capabilities. It definitely doesn't have all of the ones that you'd find in a tool like Photoshop or Illustrator, but it has far more than you would imagine by opening it up and just looking at the interface. It's very simple, but there's a lot of power in the menus. And then there's this thriving plugin ecosystem that can fill in the gaps. So it's a tool that is simple on the outside. It's almost deceivingly simple. It doesn't look like a professional tool if you just open it up.
Right.
But all of these like professional designers are using it to design some of the most important things that we use every day.
I love that comment. It's like, it doesn't look like a professional tool. And I wonder, have we fallen into a trap of like what looks like a professional tool? Like I don't know, like what?
Dark backgrounds.
Yeah, it's like, what's with the dark background? Yeah. But yeah, I have like, with Adobe's subscription model, I feel like they've allowed themselves to work more in terms of the onboarding process. And I really appreciate the onboarding, like with the thought they put into their Adobe products for onboarding for new projects. However, it really gets in my way as someone who's been using the product forever. It's like, I don't need these options. I know where I'm going and what's going on. But yeah, that's kind of, I like that question, the answer, like, it doesn't look like a professional tool. I think it's pretty funny very, very astute. So what, you mentioned plugins, like what plugins would you recommend? Like what plugins do you use day in, day out?
Oh gosh. I would almost have to fire up Sketch right now and look at my plugin menu. I would have to say that the most simple and utilitarian plugin that I love is called Rename It. Mm-hmm. It's for renaming a bunch of layers, and it has some cool features where you can number things sequentially, or put into layer names the width or height dynamically of whatever artboard or layer that you that you're renaming. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a way of adding a little bit of logic and to this, to renaming multiple layers or artboards. And it's just something that I end up doing all the time. Another one that can be useful, especially if you're not diving super deeply into optimizing SVGs kind of by hand. If you don't take my course on SVG workflows and you don't learn everything about that, then at least install Sketch's SVGO plugin. It will get you at least halfway to a good SVG. So I'm a big fan of that one, or at least recommending that. I kind of have it turned off because I do all my stuff by flicking individual switches. They've also got a plugin for automatically compressing bitmaps. And, I've been bringing bitmaps into Photoshop's Save for Web menu for as long as I can remember.
Right.
And I still do that occasionally when I need to squeeze every little ounce out of a PNG. But as a result, like, that's time consuming. I would optimize a handful of the assets that I created. And by having this automatically on, every single PNG, every single JPEG that I export out of Sketch just gets optimized really quickly It uses a bunch of the stuff within Image Optim, and a bunch of those same underlying technologies. And sure, I could squeeze an extra ounce out in Photoshop, but I'd far rather have like 100% of my bitmaps compressed than you know 2 out of 100 with like 10 kilobytes less. Here, let me jump into Sketch real quick.
Awesome.
I use Flinto a lot for prototyping, and they've got a great plugin. So that's one that I.
No, I never heard of Flinto before. So Flinto is a just an app for is it for documenting the interactions behaviors between layers?
It's for designing the interactions in your product, in your app, on your site. The Flinto is a prototyping tool that allows you to kind of link together your different screens, your different artboards in your design, and add some really cool custom animations to them, and figure out like how you should navigate through an app, and how to design those transitions between different states or between different screens. And there are a number of prototyping tools that are kind of that have popped up, and Flinto is one of them. Framer is one that is more reliant on code, more reliant kind of on JavaScript, and so that takes that approaches prototyping from more of a code-based angle. There's one that's pretty similar to Flinto called Principle. I'm biased. I helped design Flinto, and I just think, like, especially if you're using Sketch, it's so the interface is so similar in the ways that you would want it to be, in the ways that where you're like, I don't want to have to learn another tool. I just want to like have I just want to have a tool that is instantly familiar and allows me to create very advanced things very easily. And that's what Flinto does.
Yeah, I mean,
I
definitely agree with like if you know the tool, and you can work with it, you know, the better. Because someone who I know is like who's one of our speakers in the past, Phil Kaufman. He's a really great Photoshop person. He spoke at a couple of events, and he knows Photoshop better than I do. And he actually wrote an article about saying like I've tried Sketch. I can't get it to work for me, but I open up Photoshop and I can get things done faster. And that's like, cause he's invested his time and resources over the years into it. And like, hey, you know, this works for you. That's great.
Totally.
Yeah. So, but like, I could see like how we're like with Flinto, I totally agree. Also like, I mean, you probably helped them work on the application. You probably know it better than the other similar applications.
I do know it pretty well as a result. Yeah. One other plugin that came out recently, and it's far more than a plugin, really. It's kind of become its own tool. Is called Abstract, and I'm so excited about it. It's basically, and this is I'm probably saying exactly what they don't want me to say.
Okay.
But it's like GitHub for Sketch files, so it's version control. But they've added so many more features and kind of collaboration features than you would get in kind of a simple GitHub repo setup. I think it's so essential if you're working on a team. Mm-hmm. I work a lot with Git in the development projects that I work on when I'm often working with another developer. And there are just so many things that a version control workflow helps with. And, you know, having a single source of truth, like a master branch, not to mention just being able to go back and see the evolution of something that you designed. I mean, I have, for example, everything that I've done for Sketchmaster, whether it's which is my courses platform, everything that I've done from the logos to the interface of the like when you're watching the courses to the website design to all of the icons to promotional graphics to the list goes on and on. Yeah. All of that is in the same Sketch file.
Yeah.
I mean, the ability to kind of go back and see when something was done or revert a change is incredible. So Abstract is really cool.
Right.
I'm super excited. It just came out recently.
Right. Cool. Yeah. I knew it was under beta. I thought so I was waiting to hear back.
I think it's out now.
Okay, cool. Nice. Yeah. It looks like it's, you can sign up for it. I'm not sure if you can sign up for it, but yeah, really looking forward to that. But yeah, it's amazing how Git and GitHub has just revolutionized the project, the world, actually, because I was speaking to my editor. I'm working on a book right now, and I used to work in Word for writing a book, and I was like, so now I'm just like now we're working in Git, and it's so awesome just to be able to track changes and all that stuff like that. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. And I'm glad, so what does Abstract have? I know I don't know if you know this or not, but like, probably been working on it. But while you're here, I was going to ask you, what is the difference between, what are the advantages of using Abstract versus like just putting your files into GitHub? Is it just that they're more in tune with SVGs?
The sketch file format can't be read by Git.
Okay.
So basically it would just look like your whole file has changed.
Okay.
They've really deeply gone into the sketch file format.
Okay.
And for example, there's some really cool things. So when you change a symbol, which is like a reusable component that you might be using, like an icon, for example, that you could be using in 100 different artboards, 100 different screens in your design. If you change one thing on the symbol, it's not going to say that you just updated 100 screens. It's saying, okay, you updated the symbol. So it's really smart in that way. And then the kind of the collaboration and the commenting and the branch merging and all of that is pretty familiar with some additional features for teams. I've only been using it for a short while, and I do most of my work independently. But the biggest reason that you wouldn't use Git is because you can't really use Git.
Okay. I feel like it's a stupid question, Chris. What are you talking about? But
you hadn't tried it.
Yeah. I mean, I heard about it and I was like, okay, I'm going to wait till it comes out. I think I signed up for the beta, but I didn't really get into it. But I didn't get accepted. So my developer shame. But I'm like, it's cool, kids. But yeah, cool. I think it's pretty awesome with that. So, but yeah, I do want to circle back because I feel like also I do want to hear other plugin ideas, but I do like the idea of using Sketch for iteration process and be able to iterate, like you said, your slides earlier about being able to iterate. Because I feel like with responsible design, I feel like the burden on designers, especially if you're freelancing, I just feel like you have to build multiple versions of the same website and to be able to like easily take an existing idea for a phone and stretch it out to a desktop to maybe an HD display, like that's kind of great. And then also to be tying that into like an abstract where you actually store all these ideas and share them with other people. That's pretty awesome. So
pretty great. I would also make one other point, which is that, what we're talking about here are certain things that, that kind of help you create an ideal workflow or an ideal process. And sometimes, and I've been finding this a lot recently, like sometimes the process shouldn't be holy. Mm-hmm. Like the process should be unique to each project a little bit.
Right.
And when you use the same process, you end up often with the same result, which isn't very inspiring.
Yeah.
So in some projects that you need that structure, again, like when you're building a utilitarian tool, you need a bit more structure, or when you're working with a team, you need more structure. Otherwise it's just chaos. And yet I think what I'm finding really interesting is identifying when to break away from structure, when to just like, and this is one of the great things that I love doing in Sketch, creating a new page, not even creating artboards. Like maybe I just want to design some icons or something and I just, or a logo, and I just start creating layers randomly and duplicating them and just kind of having this messy desk area. Mm-hmm. And, The more that you start adding to the same file, and if, especially if you're collaborating with anybody, you start getting into this like, oh, well, if I make a change here, what if it's not right? If it's not the right change, or these artboards don't fit into this whole layout that all means something based on, it's like maybe you arrange your artboards horizontally for the progression through your app and vertically through the different states of each screen. And where am I going to duplicate my artboard and make some playful changes? And what if I make a change that affects a symbol? And so I'm a big fan of just like having a messy area, and that could be a different file, right. But like not version controlling something, right. You know, or just like not renaming your layers. Like those things are really important when you're collaborating or when you're kind of putting something into production mode, but they really get in the way when you're just trying to generate ideas and be creative. And so I'm a big proponent for figuring out like when you're in production mode and when you need rules and structure, and then when it's actually kind of getting in the way of your creative process.
Right. Yeah. I think definitely like you definitely don't want to like break in rules when you're at the start of a project or you want to bring in a lot of like, you know, creativity into it. Like, you see that with like other avenues, like if it's screenplay, you know, you don't want to have like get too bound down to making sure your words are correct or have typos or whatever. You just want to just get the words on the page.
Yeah. Just get them on there.
Yeah. First. And then revise. I mean, You know, and so yeah, I definitely see like with rules and so, and it's also process. I love the idea of like not the concept of not keeping a process holy, because like you know, and I'm guilty of that too. Where like you know, we need to put things in process, and like I think you should have a process in place, but also not be beholden to it and say like, hey, you know, and that's because I feel like having a process in place is also great, because sometimes you wake up and you're like, you don't want to remember what you just did, You forget how you did things. And that's what great for computers are great for automation. They actually like you actually have to put into process and write code to remember things. But sometimes you know having multi steps to do that, and also where to break out is very important too. So cool.
And I do that a lot in development too. Like if I the farther along I have a web project, for example, the less likely I am to write some experimental code and add it to it. So I end up making a lot of code pens. I'm like, well, here's just like this one little responsive layout, and I just need to figure out. I kind of need a messy area that I'm not going to affect the rest of the site. So I'll spend a day like engineering one thing in a code pen, and then. And then I kind of integrate it later. But without that sandbox, it's difficult to play. And when we're not playing, we create boring stuff.
Yeah. And then that goes back to our earlier conversation about like our design being dictated by our tools and not being able to like jump ship and like actually go to a code pen and say like, okay, what if we add this? What if we add that? And experiment too. So definitely say that. So I don't mean to cut you off, but because I love plugin lists, especially for people who are masters of their tools or have taught their tools for the courses and stuff like that too. So, any other tools after Abstract? Any plugins that you recommend?
I think those are the biggest plugins that I use. Okay. A lot of people are fans of Craft, and I think they're doing some really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not actually a really big part of my workflow. Mm-hmm. I've also used some responsive design plugins in the past that are becoming, for better or for worse, a little more obsolete as Sketch adds some of those features in.
Yeah.
I'd say rename it. So, to summarize some of those, rename it. Mm-hmm. Flinto is just such an easy extension of Sketch for prototyping. Abstract for version control. Mm-hmm. The bitmap and the SVG compressor plugins are great. Yeah, there's such a healthy plugin community. There's this really cool one called Looper that creates all of these abstract designs that kind of just continue patterns and in ways that like only a computer would create. Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to have to look that one up. That's awesome. So cool. Awesome. I think that's a good stopping point. Can you tell people where they can find your courses and find you online?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the easiest way to find links to just about everything that I do is on sketchmaster.com. If you scroll down a bit toward the bottom, there's a link to my own website, and to my Medium articles and to my Twitter. And that's where all the courses are. And yeah, all of my articles on Medium are up for free. And
okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Peter, for taking time today. I really appreciate you being on the show today. It's awesome. Thank you.
Happy to chat about this stuff. It's great.